What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And that's our man in booth, Big BJ.
Big BJ's.
I forget what we actually call him.
The booth thing, I believe, is
what
it was.
Oh, okay. Right,
but it's not Big BJ's, I don't think.
No, that's not
no one. That's rarely what we call anybody.
I don't think anybody said that.
So real quick, I'm going to turn off the lights in the audience. Why don't you guys chat about Jessica Jones or something?
Oh, okay, great. This is perfect.
Yeah, so I watched all the episodes of Jessica Jones because we host a comic book talk show every week. So,
yeah, so
I knew we would have to see it.
Totally. And it's like 8, 10 hours is 12 hours, 13 hours is something.
Yeah. 13 episodes.
13 episodes, hour long. Yep. Totally cool to do that in one weekend, totally healthy.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't watch a lot of it, let me be honest.
Why wouldn't you watch any of it?
There's just a lot of other stuff. I was watching other, I was in home at home watching.
Yeah, it was tough because Voltron also came out. So I'm sure you had to be like, oh man, what do I watch, Voltron or Jessica Jones? But then you were like, wait, Comic Club, I should probably watch Jessica Jones.
I ran 4 marathons over the weekend.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's very,
you're lying.
Did you do anything, Alex?
Is my mic working?
Yeah. Oh, there's a mic. Hey, how's it going? Yeah, I went up to my college for my college reunion, so I also didn't.
Wait, you own a college?
Yeah, it's called
your
Salvin
college?
University.
Wow.
It's a pyramid scheme, and so that's pretty cool. And there goes Justin.
Yep.
Bye, Justin.
So you went to Cornell.
Yes, I went up to Cornell for my college sketch comedy group's 25th anniversary.
Nice.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So one of the first things that we did in the room, we rehearsed most of the day, and we sat in the room, and everybody went around and they said what their years were.
What their years were? Or when
they graduated from college.
Well, what's your year? I don't know what that means.
Yeah, so it means like what year did you graduate?
Okay.
So what year you graduated, and then also what your favorite sketch was when you were in the group.
Nice.
And so they went around and people were like, oh, I graduated in 2008. Oh, I graduated in 2013. And then we got to this girl who said, well, I'm actually a freshman right now in the group. And somebody shouted out from the back, what year were you born? And she said 99. And everybody looked at me and went, ooh, because I graduated in 1999.
Yeah, you did.
So, of course, I said, and you're my daughter.
Of course
so that worked
did.
Out really well.
Awesome.
Yeah. But
wait,
you got mad at me.
Yeah, I got mad at you because you didn't go to the hot truck.
So Pete and I, here's a little detail for you guys. Pete and I actually went to the same college town.
Yeah,
but not
the same
to the same college.
No,
I went, of course, to Salvin University, as we've established.
Yeah.
Pete went to LePage School of
Business.
Art.
Yeah. No, I went to Ithaca. You went to Cornell.
Right.
And, Ithaca is the town that both those colleges share.
Right, so. And they have a truck called the Hot Truck.
The Hot Truck, which was one of my favorite things about going to the Cornell campus.
Right. Can any of you guess, based on the name, what the Hot Truck is? Anybody? Anybody in the audience? Just raise your hand.
No.
Anybody?
Oh,
yes.
A couple of hands,
yeah. You, sir. Wait, just shout it out. Oh, like, oh, it's cold.
I
a
like
cold
that.
Truck that drove you around. That's a very good guess.
No.
But actually, it was just basically like a hot sub truck. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, yeah. It was this guy who would sell sandwiches out the back of the truck.
Right. It's like Potbelly Sandwich Shop, but a truck.
Yeah. And my favorite was the PMP, the Poor Man's Pizza.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. That was,
what was in the Poor Man's Pizza?
It had like 2 giant meatballs and then mozzarella cheese and marinara sauce. And
I got to be honest
French
with you,
bread.
It sounds like a rich man's pizza to me.
It was like a $2, so.
Wait, here, you could just say it. We've already established on the podcast the mics aren't working. Oh, she can use his mic, so we have 2 mics. Okay, so why don't we bring out our guest? I'm very excited to have her on. She has an awesome graphic novel that is coming out tomorrow called Archival Quality from Oni Press. I'm very excited to chat about it. Ladies and gentlemen, Ivy Noel Weir!
Yeah, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Please have a seat.
Come here. Please sit down. Here's your microphone.
Welcome.
Hello, Ivy. Thank you so much for coming. Thanks for dealing with our microphone madness. For those of you listening to the podcast at home, you don't care about any of this, but that's fine. Pete, why don't you come sit on the seat with me and we can chat, or I'll sit on the couch with you. I'm sure you guys are loving hearing this stuff. Cool. So, Ivy, Archival Quality comes out tomorrow.
Yes.
We were talking about this a little bit backstage. You've been working on this for 3.5 years at this point?
Yeah. We originally wanted to do it as a webcomic, and then Oni opened up their open submissions, so we were like, screw it. Like, what's the worst that can happen? They don't take it. So that was in 2015, and we had about 10 pages. So yeah, 3.5 years later, it's a whole book out in the world.
Yeah, it's. I've read the book. It's great. It's gorgeous. There's some wonderfully human characters in it as well. But for those who don't know anything about the book, can you give kind of the pitch?
Yeah. So it follows Celeste Cell Walden, who's a woman in her early 20s, and she's dealing with some issues in her life concerning depression and anxiety. She ends up losing her job as a librarian because of it. And she finds a new job at the Logan Museum, which is a medical history museum. And right away, it's kind of weird. She has to work overnight. She has to live on the premises as the archivist. And soon she discovers that there's more going on in the museum than she thinks, including the ghost of a girl who died within its walls centuries before.
So it's interesting. The past 2 weeks, I want to say, totally randomly on the show, the topic has come up of mental illness is probably too strong, but things like anxiety and depression and other things in comic books. And then I read this book, and this is something that takes it head on through a metaphorical lens. Where did the idea originally come from?
So it's been a long time in the making, even though it took us 3.5 years to do this graphic novel. I actually started writing this book in 2012 when I was an undergrad. And I was in kind of a similar position. I had left school and I was interning in a medical oddities museum.
So it's a true story? The ghosts are real?
No ghosts. Oh, no, okay. Ghosts. Right. I mean, to be real, there's probably a ghost in that museum. It's like hella old, but no ghosts that I encountered. The weirdest thing I saw when I worked there was someone eating bagel bites next to a pile of human skulls.
That's fucked up.
Yeah. I wanted to tell a ghost story that had meaning behind it that spoke to where I was at that time, and that idea stuck with me. I think that there are ghost stories out there, particularly Guillermo del Toro is like my art hero, and he tells these ghost stories where ghosts become this metaphor for something that's lost or forgotten or in pain. And I think you can tell a story about mental health and about deep personal subjects through horror very easily.
Is that working?
For everybody?
No.
Yes, thumbs up. Great.
Yeah.
It sounds like it is working. Maybe, or maybe I'm just speaking loud.
I think you're just speaking loud.
Well, that's sort of what a microphone is. It just amplifies your voice, and in some cases, records it, especially for podcasts.
Yeah. Is it recording it for a podcast up there, you big BJ? You don't see it working. Okay, we'll keep working on it. All right. Thanks, Justin. It's fine. Justin doesn't really contribute a lot to the podcast, to be honest. Oh, Pete has a question.
Yeah, so you were just in the middle of kind of summing that up. I thought it was very beautiful, very touching. I really liked a lot of the artistic choices being made. I mean, sometimes when there's a story about like ghosts and supernatural stuff, it can get a little, it felt very real, which I very much appreciated.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, to Pete's point, it's interesting that you brought up Guillermo del Toro, because there's certainly touches of that in terms of, say, the humanity of the supernatural in the book. But the artist, I'm going to get it wrong, Steens.
You got it.
Yeah,
you got it right.
I did it on the first try. Hooray. So Steens gives it more of a cartoony quality than I would necessarily associate with, say, a good Guillermo del Toro. But do you feel like that changed the way that you approach the writing at all, working with Steens?
So I saw Steens' art. Steens and I both help run the Valkyries, which is an organization for women who work in comic book stores, because when we met, we were both working in comic book stores. I saw Steens' art in the group, and I knew immediately that I wanted her to illustrate the story that I had been writing as a prose novel. And I was like, if she doesn't do it, I'm giving up. So I basically asked her out on a book date, and I'm very glad she said yes. But I the reason I wanted it is exactly that. I think that, you know, there can be a cliche, like, Lovecraftian, like, 19th century look to, like, every haunted house story. And Steens' art is just so unlike anything I'd ever seen. It was very cartoony. And I think really what she accomplished with this that I saw in her art that I really love is there's a very warm color palette to it. And that's something you don't see a lot in horror. But I think that it lends that realness to it because it always kind of feels like it's sunset, like something's about to happen. It's about to get dark. Her work brought levity to it when it could have been very morose. And a lot of the little asides and sort of manga-esque jokes that are in it were Steens kind of improvising as she drew, too.
Was that where the bloody nose came from?
Bloody nose was in the script.
Okay.
But she drew it really effectively, and it is the only gory thing in the book. Uh-huh. So I felt like it was important that it land well, and she did a great job.
Yeah. I also really liked... even though comics is a very still medium, there was really powerful moments in the book where she was like touching something like a skull or like, and it kind of like faded to the next panel in such a kind of powerful way that I felt like the art did an amazing job helping with that transition, but giving it the weight that like a motion picture normally has.
Steens really like...
Whoa.
I was saying backstage actually that she redrew a lot of pages because it took 3.5 years. And she would get to the end of the book and she would look at the beginning and go, oh, no, I'm so much better now than I was when I drew this. So she actually developed some techniques like that, like starting to actually play with depth of field by using like focus tools in her art.
Yeah.
And it ended up coming out really beautiful.
Like you touched on earlier, the book takes place in a medical oddities museum. Is that kind of what it's called?
Yeah, the medical history museum.
Medical history. Like, yeah, not oddities. Sure. So what kind of research went into that? I know you have a couple of citations in the back, but how involved were you? How many museums of this type did you visit?
So I did my undergrad studies at Parsons here in New York in photography, and I actually... My work was all based on historical medical photography. I shot tintype and daguerreotype and fancy silver albumin printing.
We know what that is.
Oh, yeah, definitely know what those words mean.
Old-timey photographs.
Old-timey. Yeah. Like around when Alex went to college. Yeah. Like the oldest thing anyone's ever thought of.
Literally the oldest thing ever.
So I had done a lot of research into it already. And the one that I was interning at, the Muter Museum in Philadelphia, where I live, is probably the most famous one in the United States. And they're very ethical and very above board and not creepy. So it was not an experience like the one that Sel has in the book. But I've also been to the Pharmacy Museum in New Orleans. That was actually more of an influence on how the museum looked, because that's in this kind of gorgeous decaying building in the French Quarter, and it's like the whole back of the building is open to just like Spanish moss and like a courtyard. Oh, wow. And there's like a jar full of leeches. It's there are a lot in Europe. There's a very famous one in Germany. But you can, there's a lot of books, a lot of the books that I researched with, I actually bought at the Strand here, because they actually have a really great collection of creepy medical photograph books.
Wow. I know.
Do you believe in ghosts?
I do.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I wish I didn't, because I like to think that I'm a realist in most senses, but I had one ghost experience in high school and it made me a believer.
Tell us.
We gotta hear the story.
So my high school was formerly like a juvenile detention.
Oh, wow.
That's a recipe for ghosts.
But when I went there, it was for hippies. It had been repurposed into a hippie day school, and it was really weird because there was like bars on the windows and big sliding metal gates, but it was like all painted with flowers.
Are you sure you just weren't in a juvenile detention center?
They're just tricking me.
Yeah. No, this is fun. It's fun here.
You like it here. And it was really old. So there was a farmhouse also on the property that was really old, and then the creepy industrial-looking building. I was in the drama club. We were having a lock-in for drama. And
I'm sorry, a lock-in?
Like a lock-in, like a sleepover.
Would you do this?
Yeah.
That's just what they call it. They aren't locked in.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not like...
It's totally like, all right, we're just going to lock this in what used to be a really creepy prison. Drama.
So I was... we were staying on one end of the gymnasium, and mm-hmm. the bathroom was on the other end. So a friend and I walked to the bathroom. We were walking back, and we were walking across the gym. There was a row of basketballs, and they all just started rolling of their own accord.
Basketball ghosts.
So we
do you think it was the Harlem Globetrotters?
Probably.
No. The Washington Generals died in a child's prison.
So ever since then, though, you've
I was like, well, I have no explanation for this, so I will leave it ambiguously, I guess, that I neither believe or not believe in it. Cool.
Did that stop you from playing basketball?
No, it only fueled me to play more basketball.
Yeah!
The ghosts will never win!
No, you can't beat me, ghosts.
Now, you mentioned this a couple of times, but I wanted to talk about the Valkyries a little bit because it's an awesome organization. For those who don't know what it is, you touched on it a little bit, but can you describe what Valkyries is and what it does?
Sure. So it was started by Kate Leth, who is a cartoonist and comic book writer and now TV writer, and she was working in a comic book store in Canada and wanted to meet other women that worked in comic book stores because there didn't seem to be any where she was. So she started a Facebook group, and it grew. And I think now we have almost 800, maybe over 800 members worldwide.
Cool.
And it's all female comic shop workers. And then a couple years ago, we created a sister group called Valkyries Valhalla, which is for librarians, bookstore workers, museum workers, basically any women who are involved in putting comics in the hands of readers.
That's awesome.
So yeah, when I joined, I was working in a comic book shop in Wilmington, Delaware, and I eventually ended up helping to administrate it, and now I've been doing that for like 4 years.
It's, I mean, as you were saying, like, it's an incredible organization, and anybody who has been in a comic book shop knows it's a super toxic environment a lot of the time, unfortunately. And I mean, you probably have better figures than I do, but what I've noticed from this organization is there has been a palpable change in comic book shops all over just because of this organization existing and doing outreach. What have you seen? What differences have you seen since the organization began?
I think that, I mean, just on like a very personal level, it's incredibly heartening to go to conventions now because I know I always have a friend mm-hmm. at any convention that I go to. I work in publishing, so I travel a lot. I do all the Read Pop conventions, and I know
nice.
Someone in every city now because of the Valkyries, and they help each other out, help plan store events. You know, if they want to start a ladies' night at their shop, they have infinite resource to get information on it from other Valkyries. If they want to organize a meetup, or if they're having issues with Diamond, or they're having issues with Moby, or any of the other comic shop things, they have resources. It's been really incredible to see it grow. And I was at Emerald City Comic Con. Was that last week? It was the week before.
Yeah, last week, yeah.
And they had their Valkyries breakfast there, and there were like 40 people there, and they were all just overjoyed to see each other. It's
awesome.
That's
really
cool.
Great.
If somebody wants to get involved with Valkyries, where do they go? What resources are there?
You go to bewarethevalkyries.com, and you fill out a very short form, and then one of us emails you.
All right, there we go.
Cool.
Be easier.
Cool. Now, you have something else coming up as well, right? In an anthology?
Yeah, Steens and I are right around the time that we started working on archival quality, we wrote a story for the Princeless Charity Anthology, and now that's coming out, and so you'll get to see that story as well in May, I believe.
All right, very cool. So archival quality on stands in bookstores everywhere tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
All right, check it out, everybody. And we're going to move on to our next section, which we like to call The Stack.
Yeah, we do.
Love calling it that. And in The Stack, we're going to talk about a couple of other comic books that came out this week. Thumbs up, Pete?
Yeah.
Sweet. First thing we're going to talk about, which ones are we talking about today?
Very organized. Any of those ones right there.
Great, just a couple of comic books.
Yeah.
Let's talk about A Walking Dead, number 177 from Image Comics. Pass it over to
huge
you.
Huge fans in the crowd here tonight, real Walking Dead heads.
People are going nuts over here.
This
it's
great,
absolutely insane.
Great issue. Michonne is reunited with her daughter.
How does it feel?
Feels great.
Feels you feel great.
Yeah, very emotional. I very much enjoyed it. Yeah, I mean, it was I think a very touching, amazing moment, and I was very, very happy to be reading this.
Can we talk about the fact that this issue starts off with not one couple being caught in flagrante delecto, but two in a row and two entirely separate scenes.
Yeah, what
did you say?
Fucking.
They're flagrante delecto?
Yeah.
What does that mean? Who have you been hanging out with?
Caligula.
Cool. Great admission. Great. Yes, we see Maggie about to have sex with somebody, mm-hmm. and then two people we don't really know having
sex. It's a love issue. Yeah. It's a love issue. It's all about love, this issue.
Yeah, there's a picnic, a very sexual picnic.
Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, yeah.
I did like the fact that for the first time in the series, we got the classic scene of two teenagers out having a picnic and a zombie approaches them.
Yeah.
You know, it was nice to see that, I guess.
cool?
Yes.
Cool, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Good. Very into this.
Very cool.
Yeah, very cool. So now you like the reunion between...
Yeah. Because Michonne is one of the greatest characters in comic books of all time, probably.
And she had a daughter that she's been separated from for the last 180 issues or whatever, however far into this we are.
Yep.
And they're finally back together.
Yeah. Yeah. You seem non-enthused.
Well, I feel like, I mean, this comic is...
amazing.
Okay. Give me a sec. It's hard to tell where it's going or where, like, it just feels like it's floating in this place, and then there's this a punctuated moment at the end of, like, 10 issues where it's like, now it's this. And we just had that with they found this new society, and it's even more developed than the other societies that they've encountered, and we don't know when the other shoe's going to drop. There are these characters who are, like, talking about maybe killing somebody, and another character walks in and sees them, and I'm like, oh, that's, I don't know what that means. That's dramatic.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think we're supposed to get the implication that, like, something is kind of rotten, but Michonne's daughter says in this issue...
Can't you guys just enjoy the reunion and not, like, pick apart this comic?
No, literally our whole show is picking apart comics.
Oh, man.
We reunite every week in the same way. I mean, I get upset. You see me not as upset. And then we just go through.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, we're The Walking Dead.
Oh, I've never thought that. Is that true? Are you a Walking Dead fan at all, Ivy?
I haven't read the comics since the like sixth trade, but I'm glad to know that zombies are still out there cock-blocking people.
Yeah, that's a perfect way of putting on it. let's move on to our next book, which is Captain America number 699 from Marvel Comics.
A lot of fans, maybe.
There you go.
So in this issue, Captain America has been frozen once again, and he has woken up in the future, but not that far in the future, as he realizes America is a whole totalitarian state, and this is him rising up with the thing to go take down the evil leader.
Right, and the evil leader has a triangle head.
Yes.
Yeah, which is a real problem.
You think so?
Triangle head, yeah.
Why is that a real problem?
Because if you start to have like a lot of evil thoughts, your head turns into a triangle. Yeah, it's a true fact.
I don't think that's a true fact.
I feel like this comic is sort of, I feel like the villain is a Donald Trump allegory.
Sure.
Yeah. I thought that was surprising to me.
Really?
In a mainstream Marvel comic to have it be like so focused politically, that was very surprising.
Man, I don't know, though. Mark Waid is pretty outspoken politically all the time, so it wasn't that surprising to me, being the writer of the book.
What's that?
Him being the writer of the book.
I guess I'm surprised that they would go through with something like that. They seem like sort of very nervous.
It's weirder to me that the villain looks like Mr. Mime from Pokemon than anything, right?
I love this dude. I love his neck frill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's totally like a fancy Lord Fauntleroy, which is why I don't quite get... I kind of see what you're saying with the Donald Trump comparisons, but I thought it was going to be more obvious than that. Like, I thought it was going to be a big pumpkin man or something.
I was just happy that I got a little classic Captain America versus Hulk moment in there. I thought that was very nice and touching.
This whole arc has been sort of strange. Like, it feels like it's trying to tell us something. We don't quite know what it is. Revealing that Ben Grimm has been powering the city by turning a crank underneath the earth. That was weird.
Yeah, I agree. It was a little weird. The execution of it. It feels very flip for what they were setting up. It feels like, and maybe that's the way we've been conditioned with comics, right? Like, maybe we've been conditioned with, oh, post-apocalyptic future, this is something that's going to last 12 issues and be an epic to end all epics. But this is like 4 issues long, and kind of Captain America comes in and is like, oh no, I've been frozen and said, 4 years into the future. Okay, let's go. And he's pretty even and cool about it and just moves forward and decides to take down this dictator, and then he does in about two issues. Yeah. So yeah. There's not quite as much drama as we're used to with this sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I thought you guys would have a hotter take on it.
I'm surprised that...
I think it sucks.
Okay, cool.
I'm surprised that, you know, it's the classic Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt thing where they're, you know, running the... In the generator with the crank, you know, doing that whole thing, the power, the playroom.
This is a Kimmy Schmidt takedown issue?
Yeah, exactly. This is a nod to Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Wow.
Have you been checking out Captain America at all?
I have been. Wade Samnee is always a good
combo.
Yeah,
it's a great combo.
The best.
Yeah, the art is great, and the colors by Matt Wilson are great, and everything. It's a gorgeous-looking comic book. I'm excited to see what they do next issue, which I think is their last issue on Captain America.
Oh, no.
Maybe. Makes sense. It's a very high number.
Yes, 700. There you go. Speaking of heading towards the end of runs, our last pick, Amazing Spider-Man number 797, also from Marvel Comics. Pete, I'm sorry to say this is not Dan Slott's last issue.
Oh, man, I thought it was. I was all excited.
It's not.
It's
this
part
issue...
one of a story that will lead up to his last issue.
Yep.
Spider-Man, he's been working on it for how long? How many years? Like.
I mean, I would say 797 years, right? That's how comics come out?
Once a year, we're blessed with one issue of each book.
I thought this was great. I mean, I love Dan Slott's run. I'm a huge fan of it. In this, we're getting him once again bringing back the Green Goblin, but with a new terrifying iteration. The Green Goblin has the Carnage suit, but Slott and company is playing this like a horror movie. So even though we know that the Green Goblin has the Carnage suit, we don't see it in this issue. We just see it in shadow. We see touches of it. Green Goblin is menacing somebody we can't see, while at the same time we see the events that are bringing Spider-Man up to this moment. And the reveals in the issue are great. It's a lot of fun. It's bringing the whole cast. It's setting up a ton of stuff for these last couple of issues. I'm excited to see where it goes.
Now, Pete, there's a great moment here where Spider-Man, Peter Parker, and Mary Jane, his former divorced wife, is they're about to hook up, and then she sees his Spider-Man costume and is like, "No."
Yeah.
How did you feel?
Well, I felt like Dan Slott does a good job of collecting the tears of the people's lives that he's ruined and drinks them and laughs. I think that you're playing with my emotions in this scene. And it very much bothers me, you know, because it's like Mary Jane's like, "No, I don't want anything to do with Spider-Man." And I'm like, "God damn it. You should. You should want to. Because you guys were in love for so long. And then we just threw it out the window for no particular reason, for no gain."
Three more issues left. Do you think they're going to get back together?
Yeah, they got to. As soon as Dan Slott is let go of Spider-Man, Marvel's going to take back over and then reset it so we can get back to our normal lives and pretend like it never happened.
I mean, to be fair, that's not what's going to happen.
You don't have a crystal ball. You don't know the future.
That's true, Alex. They could go against every sense of logic and point of view that they've had for a long time.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
And make Pete's one and only dream come true.
Yeah, exactly.
But then you will have that great moment where Dan comes to your house and collects your tears.
let me ask you this, though, Pete. If you were Mary Jane and you were in that situation, would you get back together with Spider-Man?
That's a lot to unpack there, because like you're saying that I then made a deal with the devil and whispered something into his ear, which we still haven't revealed what the fuck that was.
Maybe she whispered, "I'm Pete LePage."
What's disappointing there as a fan is I believed in that love. I believed in their relationship. So the fact that like she doesn't even have a moment there to be like, "I want to, I'm feeling this, but I can't because
she just
of whatever."
Says, "Please leave through the window."
Yeah, she was just like, "Get the fuck out the back door."
I can't believe it has been 798 years and you're still holding on to this.
Yep. Well, when something fucked up happens, you can't just let it go, you know?
Wow. Cool. I do think that we've been making light of this for so long, but I think Pete truly feels every moment of
this. You think so?
I do think so.
Yeah.
He's not jaded and broken like the rest of us?
No, he's the only one who truly feels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you been reading Spider-Man? Are you a Spider-Man fan at all?
Is it terrible if I'm not a Spider-Man? I don't have the same emotional Spider-Man connection.
Okay. You have no... That's fine.
Yeah.
A lot of us have moved past it.
Well, I think this is really good, particularly if you are a Spider-Man fan. The art is by Stuart Immonen, who is always great. The inks are by Wade Van Grauwbadger. Sounds
cool,
like
yeah.
I'm making that up.
That's how he added a pause in the middle of his name.
Yeah. There's a question mark at the end of the name, too. There you go. Anyway, it's a really gorgeous issue, and it's a great classic Spider-Man action. And that's it for the stack.
Yeah.
All right, guys, we're going to move to our next section, which is my favorite one, because you guys make it up. It's your audience questions.
Woohoo!
And for that, I'm going to come out to you guys. You can ask a question for our amazing guest or anybody on the panel, and you'll get some free comics. You, sir, I saw your hand first. Hold on. Here we go. All right. What's your name? What's your question? Oh, boy. Here, come up here.
My name is Kevin.
What's up, Kev?
First, for the podcast listeners at home, what is on Pete's socks?
Great question.
Black Panther, baby. Got myself a new pair of Black Panther socks.
We get that question a lot. Usually
feeling
it's
great about
stain.
It. Feeling fantastic. Wakanda forever.
Okay. My real question then is, we're talking about, a lot of the, particularly with Marvel, they're going to be mixing up some of their writer-artist teams.
Right.
What are some writer-artist combinations that we've not had that you would love to see at some point?
Oh, that's a great question.
Writer-artist combinations you would love to see.
Well, we've never seen Pete and Alex working together on anything.
You didn't see our comic?
No. Oh, man.
It was Spider-Man Hates Mary Jane.
That's not. I wouldn't ever be attached to that.
I was on art. That was the weirder part.
You could literally say, hey, would you write this, even though you've always wanted to write comics and we'll pay you $1 million? I would say no.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a horrible choice in your life. That's a big mistake.
Writer-artist combinations you would like to see?
I would like to see Wade Ramos.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Deep cut.
Mm-hmm.
Humberto Ramos. Mm-hmm. Ramos.
Wade?
From, huh? Mark Wade.
Mark Wade. Oh,
okay. Wade Von Grauberger. great.
Cool. What about you?
Oh, shit. The famous people have all worked together, it feels like.
I'd like to see Frank Miller and the guy who does Owly. I think that would be
Man, that would be awesome.
It's a good
I know you're joking, but I would love that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just a dark, gritty reinvention of Owly.
Yeah.
I think that'd be fun.
It would be really cool.
I don't know if I'm going to agree with that last part, but thank you. I'm glad you're into it. Ivy, do you have an answer? It's a combo you would love to see.
I would love to see like a return to weird X-Men vignette stories done by like Kelly Sue DeConnick and Katie Skelly, like somebody who comes from the indie scene who can make it like super weird.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's fun. And I feel like the X-Men, those were some of the most fun stories where we got to just see them do like weird team-ups, go off and do something strange in the world.
Like the one where Nightcrawler like goes and just has like a nice day on the town. Just feels good about himself. That's like my favorite X-Men story of all time.
I love those. The baseball games, everything, they're the best. Cool. Justin, do you have an answer yet?
I'm thinking Archie Comics art, like Archie Double Digest style artist.
You lost me already.
What? You got to get in on it. Doing just a full, like, massive Marvel Comics crossover event. So we get to see all of the, like, the emotions played out in Thought Bubbles and Little Hearts in between everybody.
Love it.
I would love to also see Ennis Cliff Chang. I think that would be awesome.
Oh, that might be nice.
Yeah.
That was a slightly more serious answer. Okay, let's get
Pete's
another question from anybody in the crowd. You, sir, right there. What's your name? What's your question?
Hi, my name is Randy. And my question is for Ivy. You said archival quality took 3.5 years to make. And I know you said Steens went back and looked at some of the old pages and was like, I could probably do this better and redid them. Was at any point, because you're sitting on this project for 3.5 years, did you go back at any point and be like, oh, we need to redo this because I'm a much better writer than that now?
Oh,
or at
wow.
any point change it?
Nice.
Yes. There were many points where I hated it.
Oh, wow.
Like the whole thing.
So it was done in 6 months. You guys just kept like doubling back for 3.5 years.
Well, thankfully, we had an incredible editor at Oni. Like, I will give 1,000 shout outs to Robin Herrera forever. She was amazing. And there were definitely things that I rewrote over time, or characters that became more important as the story went on that ended up being rewritten to be bigger parts. So, I mean, yeah, it's weird. Steens and I both said when we saw each other at Emerald City Comic Con that we had only just read the book beginning to end straight through for the first time, like, that week when we got our copies.
Wow.
Now, how hard is that when it's like you're so close to something and then, like, having to rewrite it or rework on it? I mean, is it, like, really painful, or is it something where it's like, all right, I got to do this because it's something I want to do? I mean, do you have, like, moments where you just, like, want to walk away and say, fuck, this is not what I originally thought. This is so much harder.
I mean, you know, they say when, like, you study writing, you know, like, kill your darlings. Right. And it's tough because I feel like there should be like another side to that where you then have to know about the things that you are really passionate about that you do want to keep.
Love your darlings.
Yes.
No one loves those darlings.
Some of your darlings and kill the rest of them. Yeah. And I think that we had a really collaborative process. Steens and I talk all the time because we're best friends and co-creators.
That is just, that's darling.
So there were moments where if we saw something that we needed to fix, we could have a conversation between us and then with Robin to see, like, okay, like, do we want to chop this completely? Do we want to edit it, or is it okay? So it's just work. I don't know if it's emotionally taxing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. You're going to get some free comics. We can get another question if anybody has absolutely anything about anything, love advice, lottery numbers, anything you need to know.
Yeah, we'll rattle off some lottery numbers.
Yeah, if you guys want some lottery numbers. You, sir, yes, come on up over here. I think I can stretch this about this far.
Yeah, you got some.
What's your name?
Stretch.
What's your question?
My name is Sam. I have a question for Ivy. I was wondering if your comic was made into a movie, who would be the director and who would be your dream people to stars.
Yeah, and would you give yourself like a cameo, like a Stan Lee type of thing?
Oh, yeah. No, I would never do that.
Oh. Wow.
Is this that weird?
I feel like most
like
people...
Like, made me really mad when I see him. Like, oh, get out of here.
It's everyone's favorite part of the Marvel movies. When
is
Stan
it?
Lee, definitely not.
No.
I know that's like a really arbitrary thing to have an opinion about. So, like I said, Guillermo del Toro would be the dream. This is very much in some ways a love letter to The Devil's Backbone, which is one of his earlier movies.
Oh yeah.
I could also maybe see it being done as like a studio Leica claymation like puppet thing. Mm-hmm. Like Coraline.
Oh, yeah.
And then Dreamcast. I mean, recently, when I started watching The Good Place, the guy that plays Chidi looks exactly like how I envision Abayomi
in
my head.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, really him. Everyone else is optional, but he has to play Abayomi.
Yeah, you very get,
what's the woman who is already working at the library in the book? What's
Holly.
Holly. That could be Tahani from The Good Place as well.
Oh, maybe just catch just, the good place.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. Just do the good place.
Exactly.
book.
Is this book a ripoff of The Good Place?
Yes. Cool. I think we could take one more question, if anybody has anything. One more question, you're going to get some free comics just for asking a question. You, sir.
That's
all
great
right.
Stuff.
What's your name? What's your question?
My name is Sean.
What's up, Sean?
You mentioned that Oni, you submitted. Was that your first publisher that you submitted your comic book to, or was there sort of ideas of other businesses that you, or other publishers that you wanted to pitch to?
Oni was the first one, which is unusual.
That's how it always works. You just submit it once to one person, and then you're famous.
That is never how it works. We were very lucky.
Yeah.
It was because they advertised this submission, like open submissions period, where they really were seeking talent and they were seeking submissions. I know that there are a lot of resources online like there's a blog I think that has the submission guidelines for every comics publisher. Like if you Google that, you can find it. And so, you know, if you are working on a pitch, like just make sure you're doing it to what they want. We were lucky that Oni had like functionally like not a contest, but like a set time period, what they were looking for, and exactly what to send.
And then
they
best ghost story set in a museum.
you know, and I know that they got a ton of submissions for that. So, you know, if you submit something you don't hear back, remember that they're getting a ton of submissions all the time.
And how did that work once they selected you?
So they let us know, and then I ran a lap around my office building, and then we started working on the book pretty much right away once contracts were signed, which took about a month. And so I wrote the script with our editor, and then Steen started drawing when I was revising the script, and she worked in chunks. So it was really
It's pretty fast. I'm surprised it's like sort of unfettered. Like, yeah, go get them.
It was very smooth. I expected it to be harder than it was, which is like the worst thing to say. That makes me sound like such an asshole.
Well, I know. I agree. I would expect it to be much harder, especially in an open submission situation. And then to have it be so quick and smooth is amazing.
Yeah, I think again, awesome. It's that collaborative thing. We all just, like, we hit a really good team working together.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, guys, we're going to move on to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
Guys, we're not going to talk about Week in Geek and talk about Jessica Jones, how much you guys like the show.
No, we don't have time.
We don't have time for stuff like that.
Man, that's ridiculous, you guys.
It's a lot of people.
All right, well, this part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. So if you had $25, you go to a comic book shop. Who would like $25 free? A simple raising of the hand. Yeah, you, first hand up guy. Come on down.
Come on.
Come out. Grab that microphone, sir.
That's nice. Amazing. I don't know how you do it.
What is your name again?
My name is Sean.
Sean, audience, Sean. Sean, how this is going to work is I'm going to read you a question, listen to all three possible answers. You get all three questions right, $25 will be yours. Today's trivia is on her amazing book, which is available tomorrow or today, depending on when you're listening to the podcast.
Or yesterday.
Or weeks ago. What the fuck are you doing with your life? Get out there and get it. The main question number one, the main character, Celeste, a.k.a. Cell, her grasp on reality starts to slip when she starts dreaming of blank. Is it A, a young woman, B, an old dog, or is it C, a young Nixon? So it's either A. All right. Yeah, there you go. A nice. Is correct. She
so
starts
political,
dreaming of a young
Pete.
Woman. When she starts looking into who the young woman might be, Celeste starts blank. Is it A, losing money, B, losing time, or C, losing the thumb war? So it's either A, if you don't want $25, or you should pick B.
It's definitely B.
B is correct. Yeah, she starts losing time. The story also deals with, is it A, mental health, B, super strength, or is it C, the Fortress of Solitude? So it's either A, mental health.
It's definitely A.
Yes, $25 free.
Nice.
Congratulations, sir. I'll take that microphone. Thank you.
All right, guys, as we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
Oh, man, a lot of great stuff coming out tomorrow.
Hit me up.
I bet you've said that every week for all of time.
Curse Words, number 12, I'm excited about.
Great stuff.
Punisher, number 222.
Man, very that guy's still going. That. Still Punisher.
Yes, yeah, still Punisher.
He's so angry.
222 years of the Punisher. That's crazy.
Wow. What a lifetime.
Yeah. Wow. You know, when you're doing what you love, you know, it just, you know,
it's not
time
even
doesn't matter.
It's not even working.
Yeah, it's not working.
They say if you find what you love, you don't do a day of work in your life. Yeah. Is that what they say?
Yeah.
You work pretty hard, but you got there.
Yeah.
Well, what I love is saying aphorisms.
I'm looking forward to Mr. Miracle number 7. Very excited for this issue. This comic is truly maybe
you're just a big softy.
I am. Maybe the best comic on the stands right now. I feel like Tom King is just writing so hard.
Mitch Gerards
is so good. Definitely check it out. It's great.
Yeah. And we should mention we do a podcast every Wednesday morning that goes up at 9 a.m., which has reviews of comics that day. Mr. Miracle will be one of those, so stay tuned for that.
Oh, wow, man. You already know we're talking about that?
Truth bomb. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I do. I don't want to explain time travel to you.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to Action Comics number 999 is coming out. I've actually been really enjoying this title. They're changing up the teams coming up soon, but this is Superman Booster Gold going through some time travel adventures.
When does Bendis start writing?
Two more issues, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
Something like that. Definitely shaking things up after 1,000. Like, there's the big 1,000 issue where they have a bunch of short stories. But this has been a lot of fun, and I've been enjoying it. I also like just looking at that number, 999. It's very nice.
Cool. I think Bendis starts on 1,001.
101.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, 1,001 Dalmatians got stuck in my head.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah, no, it really doesn't. Ivy, what are you looking forward to?
I also love Mr. Miracle. It is amazing. Yeah. And I'm really excited about Eternity Girl.
These,
like, really deeply weird DC books that have been coming out have been awesome, pretty much across the board, and it looks like it's going to be gorgeous, and Mags Passaggio is a great writer, so I'm excited.
Well, I'll tell you, if you're excited about Eternity Girl, you should check out The Stack, our podcast that posts at 9 a.m. on Wednesday mornings. Maybe there's a review of that. I don't know. Maybe it's real good. Plug your stuff again. What should people check out?
So Archival Quality is available tomorrow in your comic shop. I saw it on that previews list, which is still surreal.
That's so nice.
We have a story coming out in the Princeless Charity Anthology in May.
All right, very cool. A couple of things before we go. Next week on the show, we're going to have Marcellus Hall from Kaleidoscope City. A new book is going to be here. That's very cool. Excited to have him on. Yeah. Also, the show is free to come see and free to listen to, but it does cost us a little bit of money to do. If you're here in the theater, we have a literal hat you can toss a couple of bucks in. Or if you're listening at home, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Additionally, as mentioned, we do a Wednesday morning podcast. We also do a couple of other podcasts. We have a Riverdale podcast called Riverdale After Dark that posts every week after that show, which is the most insane show on television.
We
just started up a Krypton After Show podcast that is going to be posting after that show airs. You can download the preview episode as subscribe to get the latest episodes of that. Pete, what else do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about all the amazing guests we have on our show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for the podcast and more. A couple of people we want to thank before we go. We want to thank our fabulous interns, Elon Bell, Trevor Dark, Craig Fletcher, David McKay, and Riley Trahan. We want to thank Ivy for being on the show.
Yeah.
We want to thank our booth guy,
BJ.
First of all, we want to thank you guys. We're every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Totally free. Please tell your friends. Good night.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for coming out.